Yes. Now, we have like three warehouse spaces, actually, full of new equipment that just got picked up through the years. I have a couple different electric chimes, and I'll show you one downstairs. We're going to get noises in this building. There's no way around it. There's people making music in every room. The guitars, there you go, that's the bottle rocket.
Okay.
And it was on like about 30 or 40 other movies too.
Studio executives that first matched you up with Wes Anderson for his first film, Bottle Rocket.
Yeah.
Can you tell me what made you decide that this was a partnership that would work?
I went to a screening where it was like a record number of walkouts. I don't know what they were expecting. I was watching this film, though, and I thought, well, this guy's got a whole nother take on our culture. It was, you know, at the time, you know, like people were making these movies that were about the Pacific Northwest, and it was all grunge music and all kind of downers. And this was kind of a nice, happy, optimistic film in a way. And I don't know, the characters were losers, but they were lovable at the same time.
Bob Mapplethorpe, potential getaway driver, go. Go.
Well, I think there's a real air of mystery about
me. Don't complicate it. Your number one strength is you have a car you can provide. Sell yourself. Start over. You ready? Go.
Okay, all right. I'm a risk taker. I'm growing an entire crop of marijuana plants in my parents' backyard. I think that shows
a
little
bit. Wait a second. You're growing an entire crop of marijuana in your backyard?
Figgin' and look, I'm just not that good at this selling yourself stuff, okay? So I'm just gonna tell you the truth. I really wanna be a part of this team.
And I'm the only one with a car.
That's good. That's good. Because that hits me right here.
And I liked his music choices. He had odd music temped in. He had this Morricone score that came from something called Zorro. And he was this young, school book-looking guy. You know, he wasn't at all like your hip, groovy Hollywood character. And all those things made me like him. He knew he was up against a studio and producers that were concerned that maybe he didn't know what he was doing. And, you know, I said, well, I'll protect you as much as I can from my side of things. And he said, I'll protect you as much as I can from my side of things. And so we got together, and from the get-go, it was interesting to work with him. He was very articulate about what kind of instruments he liked, and he didn't always know till he heard them. But as I started playing things for him, he liked all these high-pitched kind of things and plucky things. He liked harpsichords and celestes, and he liked acoustic guitars up high, and he liked flutes. He didn't really like bass instruments that much, and he didn't like the lower end of the music scale, which was, I found that very, very peculiar, you know. But yet it's like when we finished the score, it all worked with the film very well.
I'm interested in what you said a bit earlier when you first started working with him, that you made this sort of pact to protect each other's territory. And I wondered, what kind of things would you usually have to be fighting against?
Well, when we were first playing back, you know, pieces of score for the producers, because it was his first movie, so they're keeping an eye on him, and Jim Brooks and a couple of the people that worked with his production company, they'd come over to my studio, which was in my house at the time. So they'd come over and they'd listen to music and they'd kind of like, well, you know, that isn't what we were thinking of. But then they'd leave, and then about a half hour later, a messenger would show up with a copy of the video, VHS videotape, of a movie called Big with Tom Hanks in it that had this light jazzy score to it. And the first time I got it, I called Wes up and I go, "Hey, you know, Jim just sent me over this movie," he said, with a sticker on it that says, "Watch this." And he says, "Oh, just ignore it." He says, "Don't worry about that." I says, I'll deal with him." In the end, though, Wes and I got the music we wanted in the film. And since then, it's been like each movie we add in, you know, more instruments. That's a hand-pumped pipe organ. And it's got little wooden keys. And I don't know, I love that thing. A little two-octave, you know, high.
It's like what you see the angels playing in paintings you see.
Yeah. Probably a couple angels have played that. Yeah, that's... No, it was in Life Aquatic during the film festival at the beginning. By the time we got to Life Aquatic, this film here, for the first time we used electronic instruments because there's a character in the film that is a composer. He composes music for the films inside the film. You know, the ship that he's on, their equipment's all, you know, horribly outdated. It's all from the 60s and 70s, and they're recording sound on a two-track reel-to-reel tape recorder, and he's using Casio tone keyboards to play. It was kind of fun because I ended up going through the basement here at this building and going through the old Devo synths, you know, old analog synthesizers from the 70s and pulling them out. And that was kind of fun to, you know, to go backwards for a while electronically.
I was going to say, with Devo, you were always sort of at the forefront of developing new technologies. So what kind of possibilities did using these old keyboard instruments open up for you?
The cool thing about analog synths is they know that ever since MIDI, all these different instrument manufacturers have been able to communicate, and their instruments will hook up together. But they've also become, in some ways, they're a little bit homogenized. Back in the 60s and 70s, synthesizers were self-referential and self-enclosed instruments back then. So you'd find different synths from the 70s that have like either controllers or certain sounds or certain effects on them that were unique to that instrument and never became replicated. First off, they're tactile because you're touching them and you're twisting knobs and dials like a scientist or something, you know. So that's kind of fun. But also it's just there are sounds that you could get back then and that you could create with these things that you can't do now. I mean, and I'm not saying that things, you know, new technology doesn't have new, you know, possibilities, which is absolutely true. I'm just saying that it's a trade-off. So there's this guy, Wolodarski, in the film who's writing these little dinky industrial adventure soundtracks. The fun part was we knew we were going to use an orchestra. And Wes says, "Now, can you make them sound as much like the Casio stuff at the beginning of the cue and then have it open up and turn into a real orchestra?" So it turns into real adventure music like about 30 seconds into the cue. And all the players with violins and, you know, oboes and brass horns, when I'm saying, "Okay, now we want you guys to sound as much like these little Casio sounds here as you can." And they're like just looking at me like, "Okay, it's another crazy person in Hollywood that we have to work for today."